Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello, folks, and welcome once again to the Tennis Podcast and our latest edition of Olympics Relived. We've already lived through the Olympics 1988 through to the year 2000 in Sydney, and we now arrive at 2004 and Athens, the Olympics return to its birthplace 104 years earlier. Just before we get on to reliving Olympic things, a little bit of news to update you on since our last weekly actual tennis-based podcast a couple of days ago. The news we've had is that the entry list is out for the US Open. And Rafael Nadal is not on it. He has made an announcement that he will not be playing the US Open. It is for health risk based reasons, which I think we all respect that. It's obviously disappointing for the tournament that Nadal won't be there. First Grand Slam with neither Federer nor Nadal since 1999. Wow. On the women's side, 9 of the world's top 10 are on the entry list. It's only a number one Ash Barty that's not on it. Obviously, entry list does not mean list of players that are actually definitely going to play. But it's nonetheless, you know, at this early stage, a bit of a boost for the US Open. And the other bit of news we've had is that, as entirely expected, the Madrid Masters and Premier Mandatory tournament has been cancelled. I mean, the writing was on the wall for that, as we discussed on Monday, but it has been formally cancelled. We do understand there's a chance that Kitzbühel, which is a tournament that must get a mention on every tennis podcast, apparently, might now move back a week to take up that place in the calendar where Madrid was going to be. Have I said that quickly enough so that we can move on to Olympic stuff as soon as possible?
Yeah, it's. I mean, there are a lot of good players all over those entry lists, and as you say, who knows how many of them will end up playing? But and we knew that the likelihood was that Nadal wasn't going to play. There was maybe a little bit of doubt about that when Madrid was cancelled. Perhaps Nadal might have changed his mind, but you said it at the time. You felt that if it was a view on the virus itself and not wanting to travel, then it's not going to change. And sure enough, he made it clear that it was because of his concerns over the virus. He just feels the world isn't ready for that, and he's not comfortable to travel. I did sort of slightly wryly smile when I saw the press release from the USTA, not even including Nadal's name in the release, not even acknowledging that they're defending their reigning champion was not actually going to be there because of the decision he'd taken. And yet they did mention that Roger Federer wasn't going to be there because of his injury. I thought that was poor, personally. I think just acknowledging the champion would have been a classier thing to have done. And actually, I noticed in Chris Clary's piece overnight in the New York Times that he spoke to the tournament director, Stacey Allister, who took a completely different tack and paid tribute to Rafa and said she looked forward to him returning. And I think that that is certainly the right way to have played that. But yeah, we've also seen one or two notes overnight of the protocols that the USTA plan to employ for COVID-19 testing, and if somebody tests positive in a team or a player themselves, and the player will just be removed from the tournament and will have to isolate. And the words of James Blake really came back to me upon reading those rules, of just what it might take even for the tournament if it had a lot of people testing positive and having to be removed from the draw. How many could a draw take? You know, this something I hadn't really considered before.
And if you're staying in independent accommodation, so electing not to stay in the sort of official bubble hotels, then you have to pay for and be responsible for private security to monitor your bubble adherence, which is intense, but I suppose slightly reassuring. But goodness me, it's a lot. And yeah, the question remains unanswered of what the threshold is for that tournament. At what stage do you stop treating it as individual cases and start seeing it as a hotspot that needs to be shut down? And as depressing as that prospect is, they need to have a plan for that scenario.
Mm. And actually, from what we saw in the notes overnight that were put out on social media unofficially, they said they hadn't really come up with a threshold yet, it sounded like, and that they would kind of work that out as it went along. They also said they've made positive progress with regard to the quarantining procedures of going back from the United States onwards to the next destination of each player after they're out of the tournament, including the EU. But it didn't sound as though it was a done deal yet.
In other news, it is 11 a.m. on Wednesday. The newsletter hasn't even gone out yet, and Matt is the only one of us whose prediction for the week is still in the tournament. So for all those of you yearning for some kind of tennis normality, I can confirm that it has returned.
Yes, I went with Marketa Vondrousheva and was following every moment of her three-hour epic against Kaya Juvan, who's a very exciting upcoming player, who went and dumped Vondrousheva out of the tournament. And Catherine lost Elise Mertens in straight sets. Matt, well, you were a bit more clever than both of us, weren't you?
I picked Donna Vekic, who had already won her first round match by the time we made the prediction. So I've been stung that way many times before, having made a prediction who's gone out before the newsletter has been sent. So I was hoping desperately to avoid a repeat of that in our first predictions for 5 months. But yeah, thank you, Catherine, for bringing that up. I couldn't bring that up. Sort of.
Is this the time that I also bring up the fact that you're riding high currently on Fulham joy? Is now the time for that?
Yes, please.
It's always the time. Maybe it's always the time. I think the next month before you start losing every week is the time.
He sat there quietly for 6 minutes, Catherine. So impressive. Didn't make a word, didn't utter a word.
I was building up to it. Matt, would you, for anyone that doesn't know, Matt's team, Fulham, won the playoff final at Wembley last night against rivals Brentford, and have secured promotion to losing every week in the Premier League, which is the real prize. Would you exchange this moment for an Olympic gold?
Gosh, I wasn't expecting that question. I mean, it's actually a bit of an Olympic feel to the story, with an unlikely goal scoring hero. He's a kind of person that you don't normally talk about. Joe Bryan, who scored Fulham's goals, is not someone who usually makes headlines for scoring goals, and he scored two. But yes, I mean, my apologies to all non-football fans for sort of basking in this glory, but please just allow me my moment to to do that.
Doesn't get many.
Yes, I think the Hotman Cup highlights for the time being have been replaced, and I'm just watching Joe Bryan's free kick on a loop for the last 12 hours.
And that Joe Bryan show rules.
And that goalkeeper's dive,
which was comical.
Was the funniest thing I've ever seen on the football field. The ball had gone past him into the net, and then he thought, oh, I better dive. And so he did.
Better make it look like I tried.
And actually, I will give this a tennis flavour in that there's a close-up shot of Joe Bryan before he takes the free kick with his tongue out. And it reminded me of what Andre Agassi used to say about Boris Becker's serve, that he was able to read the direction of the serve based on the direction that Boris Becker's tongue was pointing. And he was keen never to reveal this information because it was his way of breaking Boris Becker's serve, so he said. And yeah, I noticed that Joe Bryan's tongue was pointing in the direction that he ended up kicking the ball and scoring. So
that is niche.
A niche tennis connection there for Fulham's so, great moment.
Apologies to every tennis podcast listener. Matt is now going to be headhunted by football teams who need somebody to identify which way football is going based on their tongue.
I suddenly feel really lonely. We've had this sort of camaraderie all season of finally all being in the same league, and I've been abandoned.
Well, whose fault is that?
Absolutely. I'm not seeing remorseful faces here. So let's move on and
now
talk
we can
about
support Reading for 46 games with you, Catherine.
Yes, no conflict of interest.
I recommend you don't watch those 46 games.
We're not going to watch them. We're just going to
flipping sort of, arduous.
Just going to look at the live scores occasionally.
Right, the Olympics 2004. As I said, 108 years since the first modern Olympics, and they were returning to their birthplace in Athens. There was only one track and field world record broken. That was in the women's pole vault by Yelena Simbayeva, 4.91 meters. The defending shooting gold medalist, Matthew Emmons, was on target to retain his title when in the final stages he shot his opponent's target, ending up in eighth. He went to
no
drown
way.
His sorrows. Yeah, he went to drown his sorrows in a bar and met the woman who would become his wife.
Oh, that's amazing!
It's good, isn't it?
Wow,
it's good.
I was very pleased you said his opponent's target. I was thinking for some yeah. terrible moment this was going to be one of those sad news events, and he accidentally shot his opponent.
No, all fine for Matthew Emmons. Hope that marriage is still going strong. Michael Phelps won 8 medals, 6 gold, making him the swimmer with the highest haul at a single games. Brazilian Vanderlei Lima was far ahead in the marathon with 7 kilometres to go when a defrocked priest leapt from the crowd and started to push and shove him. Lima ended up third but was awarded a special medal. Does defrocked priest mean naked priest? Or does it just mean without the special gowns?
What had he done? I'm trying to work, call that one out.
Anyway, he got himself a 2 medals there, a bronze and a special medal. 25 Olympians failed doping tests. 7 of them were medalists and 11 of them were weightlifters. And it was the Olympics where, if you remember, 2 Greek sprinters faked a motorcycle accident to avoid a doping test and were disqualified before competing. I remember that very clearly. David's looking blankly. It was one of those completely weird stories.
I didn't get a chance to follow that much of the Athens Olympics. I mean, it sounds like I missed some fantastic stuff. So thank goodness for reliving. This is great.
It's amazing what you say there about so many of those doping tests. One of the incredible things is to go on Wikipedia and look at the medal table for an Olympics and then scroll a little bit past it and then look at the revised medal table. And, you know, in the years after, so many medals change. I mean, I think GB have ended up with 4 more medals out of the Athens Olympics based on all the positive doping tests that have come out retrospectively. And yeah, it's quite frightening actually how different the medal table looks when all that's been taken into account.
Last fact for you, Yang Taeyong was denied gold when the judge incorrectly marked his routine 9.9 instead of 10 in the rhythmic gymnastics. This led to a bronze medal instead of a gold. The IOC refused to overturn the decision because the team had not appealed in time.
When you say incorrectly, it just means that they kind of put the wrong thing down, or?
I guess so.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary. I was thinking as well how I've seen a few of these athletes who've, in the moment, not won a medal, and then it's been upgraded to a medal because somebody has been caught for doping. And I've seen a number of them how they wrestle with that, how they struggle with not having had the moment, and it can never really be put right.
There's quite a lot of bitterness surrounding situations like that, which I can absolutely understand. I think the British bobsleigh team at a recent Winter Games, possibly the Sochi Games in 2014, they've been upgraded to a bronze medal. Everyone's looking at me like you've gone too niche, Catherine. Too niche.
I'm enjoying it.
Okay. In terms of the tennis in 2004, it was the first Olympics since its return where ranking points were awarded, and the men's matches were best of three sets until the finals, which were best of five. That's in the singles and the doubles. Justine Henin, at that point, actually, she was Justine Henin Ardenne, won singles gold against Amélie Mauresmo in the final. That, despite playing only one tournament in 4.5 months, that was Roland Garros, where she lost in round two. And she was also 5-1 down in the final set against Anastasia Myskina in the semi-finals. So kind of, and against the odds, gold medal for Justine Henin Ardenne in 2004. She said, "It's a very moving moment for me coming back to the sport after months of being in pain. It's difficult for you to imagine the states of depression I went through. I realise now how fortunate I am to be able to be on the court. I'm really glad to have had the chance to be able to give 100% out there. I can honestly tell you that I was always dreaming about Grand Slams. But now maybe I change my mind tonight because it's different. You feel like you're playing for the whole country, for the colours of your country. That's something really different. But you're in a Grand Slam and you're alone." Which are extremely powerful quotes there from Justine Henin Ardenne. Well, she's now Henin, but yeah, at the time, Ardenne. And Alicia Molik won the women's bronze.
And I heard an interview with Alicia Molik earlier this year when she admitted that she's lost her medal, and she really struggles to talk about it, actually. She's really hurt by the fact that she's lost her medal. I don't think she went into details of the way she lost it, but clearly it makes her incredibly uncomfortable to talk about it, despite the fact that, you know, this is, she described it as the most emotional, proudest moment of her career. And then to have lost the medal is something that she just finds absolutely heartbreaking. It was a real kind of unexpectedly poignant interview. I remember it being earlier in the year, which I saw.
That's really sad. I really feel for her, but also something that wouldn't have happened if you'd kept it about your person at all times. The women's doubles gold was won by Li Ting and Sun Tiantian of China. It was the first Olympics played by Martina Navratilova partnering Lisa Raymond in the doubles. 2004, Martina Navratilova, like the queen she is, plays her debut Olympic Games.
Brilliant.
Which is awesome. What would she have been there, late 40s? No, mid 40s.
Yeah.
Mid 40s. And they made it to the quarters.
I mean, that's... I love that. I think that's really cool.
I mean, and it's some 30 years into her career almost, isn't it?
Ridiculous. I think she might have won a slam that year.
She won one with Leander Paes, didn't she?
Yeah.
Around that time.
I think they won Wimbledon in 03. It was very much a stage where she was still somehow successful.
Now, in terms of this show and the interviews we've got for you, we're going to be focusing on the men's event, because we have spoken to all three medalists in the men's tournament from Athens 2004 and the doubles gold medalist, because it's the same person. Nicolas Massou in Athens 2004 became the only man ever to have won singles and doubles gold at the same Olympics. Just before we get on to talk about the three medalists, I will remember this Olympics, aside from Nicolas Massou doing what he did, as the one that got away for Roger Federer. It was that loss to Thomas Burdick, who was 18 at the time. It was the announcement on the scene of Thomas Burdick. Everyone was saying he's a definite Grand Slam champion in waiting. And it was the absolute peak of Roger Federer's powers. And it was a really seismic shock at the time. And yeah, I'm sure there's a few that he feels got away, but I think this is a big one for Roger Federer that he feels got away.
I remember Googling Thomas Berdych after that because, as I say, I didn't get to watch that many of the matches during 2004. But you're right. I mean, at that stage, Federer would have just won his second Wimbledon, and he was dominant. He'd won the Australian Open as well, and he was just not even losing matches. He would go through massive spells of dominance where nobody was getting near him, and yeah, I'd probably heard of the name of Thomas Berdych, but I'd never seen him play. And then you see this very tall guy with a baseball cap and a curly ponytail out the back, which he kept for some time, which it's hard to remember that now, but that's what he looked like. And he, as you say, he just had this game that looked destined to make him one of the top players in the world, and it did. I mean, he became a contender for many years, but maybe that was one of his biggest ever wins, given the circumstances.
I remember when we did our worst of the big three pod, I looked into this match and it wasn't played on the main stadium court, and Federer lost in singles and doubles on the same day. He came into the press conference and said, "I wasn't happy with my serve, my forehand, my backhand, my movement. It was a terrible day for me." So, and I think it's one of those which actually at the time felt like a seismic shock and one that got away. And it's just become even more of one that got away as his career has gone on and he's come close to getting the singles gold medal but not got it. Even more so, this feels like one that slipped through his fingers. Even though it wasn't in the final or even in the semi-final, it was very early on in the tournament. But that's just a illustration of just how dominant he was at the time, and he really just should have won that event.
And he wasn't the only sort of big early upset. Andy Roddick, who had won the US Open, of course, the year previously, he was the second seed at that tournament. He lost in round three to Fernando Gonzalez, the eventual bronze medalist. Tim Henman was the fourth seed in Athens 2004. He lost to Jiří Novák in round one, which I don't think will go down as an epic moment of Tim Henman's career. Juan Carlos Ferrero was one of Marty Fish, the silver medalist, one of his victims. He was the fifth seed. David Nalbandian, the sixth seed, he withdrew ahead of the tournament. Reiner Schüttler, the seventh seed, he lost in round one to... Now, it says Andreev here. Is that Igor Andreev playing?
Yeah.
Isn't Igor Andreev still playing?
Oh, I don't think so. I've seen him around, though. Whether he's... I can't remember whether he's coaching or whether he's a federation guy somewhere, but I have seen him around.
Okay.
But no, he doesn't play anymore.
Oh, I had done a Martina Navratilova on Andreev and extended his career.
His name comes up, though, quite a lot because he's had some significant wins. For instance, I think he broke the Nadal. He was the last man to beat Nadal.
He had big moments, didn't he? He could just blast past people.
He was for the long time... the answer to the quiz question, who was the last person to beat Nadal on clay? Because I think he beat Nadal, and then Nadal went on to his winning streak of 80 matches or something on clay.
And Marat Safin, who was the ninth seed, he lost in round two to Feliciano Lopez, who is still playing, confirmed. Or given the opportunity, will still be playing, but is lacking for opportunities at the moment. So, yeah, as mentioned there, Nicolas Massou was the story on the men's side at the 2004 Athens Olympics. He wasn't expecting to be the story. Nobody was expecting him to be the story. He was having a great year. He was ranked just outside the world's top 10. But that is not to say anybody was talking about him as a potential gold medalist, let alone double gold medalist. I had the absolute joy of speaking to him and getting to hear his story of the 2004 Olympics, and here it is.
Well, for me, I was in three Olympic Games in Sydney, Athens and Beijing. So for me, to represent my country in Olympic Games is one of the biggest things that you can do like an athlete. And the best memories always were like in Olympic Games. For example, in Sydney 2000, I bring the flag from my country in the open ceremony. So I was really young at that age. I was almost maybe 19 or 20 years old. So I was really, really impressed and big for me and for my family and for the Chilean people to take the flag in the open ceremony. And then 4 years after in Athens, I arrived there with 24 years old, with better ranking, with more experience. And of course that I arrived there dreaming to win a medal. And of course that there's a lot of pressure because the Olympic Games is every 4 years and you don't have so much time in your career to play so many. So I think that for sure was the best 2 weeks in my career, my tennis career, because it's something really, really big. And then I fight for something big to put my name in the history of my country and the history of the tennis part. And well, the two gold medal is really, really amazing feeling.
You were seeded 10th, I think, in Athens, but it wasn't your favorite surface, hard courts. What were your expectations going into that tournament?
Yeah, well, first of all, my biggest results in the biggest tournament was in the hard court. For example, I made finals in Madrid in 2003 in indoor carpet. My best Grand Slam was Yusov in four rounds. And then the Olympic Games. Yes, of course, that I was fighting for to be top 10. I was always all the year like number 11, 12. And I lost some few matches to get me in the top 10. And well, after that, I arrived, number 10 seed. And then after that, I touched the number 9. So it was also one big dream for me to be top 10 in the world. And number 9 is incredible. And my surface, I born on clay in South America, in Chile. At that time, when I was young, we didn't have like a hard course. I think only one in one club that we practiced sometimes. But then everything was clay. So at the beginning of my career, when I start to play like in 16, some indoor tournaments in Europe or under 18, for me it was really difficult at the beginning because I was not used to it. But I always believed that my game could be much better and maybe at the same level like I play on clay because of my shots, because of my movements, and because I understand the game. And also I was like positive in that part. So of course that when I arrived to Athens, I didn't win one match in all the year on hard court. In all the year. So I arrived to the Athens, the Olympic Games, and no matches I win in all the year in 2004. Before that, okay, I play so good on clay. I won 1 month before Kitzbühel when the tournament was like 500. I was playing good on clay, but something happened that year that I didn't play that well on hard court. So, of course, that in my mind at the beginning was not so easy because the conditions there in Athens were so fast, the balls small, a lot of wind. But you know that in tennis, the confidence is everything. And also in a sport that you are alone there. So I think the practice the days before and the atmosphere, and when normally when I play for my country or I do something for my country, I increase my level normal in that time. So after one win in the first round against Guga Kuerten, I play really well, and then I start to play better and better and better, and I play really, really amazing in singles and doubles all the week, very regular.
Did you stay in the athlete's village?
Yeah, always. I think that's the most important thing, because when you are in the ATP or playing tournaments, you are always in the hotels and this. And for me, you need to feel the atmosphere of Olympic Games, to be in the Olympic Village, to share time with other athletes. I like to look a lot at other sports, how they behave, how they practice. Go to the gym to see different sports, because I'm used to see all the tennis players, but to the time with other players, they are waking up at different time, coming back at different time. So for me, this atmosphere brings you a lot of experience. So I always decide to stay inside and to share with other athletes, of course, with athletes for my country and other ones. So I'm happy to decide that all my career.
Did you have the chance to go and see any other sports? Do you remember feeling inspired by any other athletes in particular?
Well, in that Olympic Games in Athens, not that much, because I was winning and I was playing singles and doubles, and we stay all day in the club. So, well, for me, it was the Olympic ceremony, the open ceremony, and that's it. I tell you something. I didn't went to see the city in Athens. Nothing, just from the Olympic Villa and the club for the whole 12-14 days. After 10 years, on 2014, I came back to Athens to check the city, to have good memories, because after 10 years, so I decided to stay there. For example, now, in this week, I'm in Mykonos exactly now. I'm in Greece now. I arrived today in the morning to have some holidays this week, because I decided to come to Greece. So I like it to be here. And after the Olympic Games, only I came back after 10 years, and now again for the first time in Mykonos, just to feel this country that brings me a lot of memories.
That finals weekend, the 10 sets of tennis that you played in 2 days, do you remember?
Yeah.
Do you remember what you were thinking going into that weekend, knowing that you would have the chance to play for 2 gold medals for your country?
Well, I think that every match gave me a lot of confidence, and I always prepare in my mind and in my practice that one day maybe I will have the chance to make something big. And always I dream for that, to win the Davis Cup, for example, to be number one in the world, or to be top 10, or to win a slam, or to win the Olympic Games. So many things, when you are a kid, you dream a lot. And you dream. And dream is for free. But you need to work, you need to believe on yourself, because many people can have the confidence outside, but the most important person to have the confidence is you. So I said to myself, okay, I will prepare always 100%, because if in one moment of my career arrive an important stage, I need to take it. Don't waste that that moment. So I think that when I arrived to semifinal, when I won against Carlos Moyá, and when I won the doubles with Fernando against the Bryans, of course that we were like in semifinal, and me in singles and doubles, I said, okay, I'm so close, and I saw the big chance to make something big. Of course, that was not so easy in some moment of the week, because with Fernando we play a lot, and normally to maintain the singles and doubles was not so easy. You have to remember also that the Olympic Games before the finals was playing at 5 sets. So I played for many, many hours, but I worked so hard to maintain the energy, to maintain my mind. I was really strong. I really prepared a lot to ride that stage. So, yes, and the good thing that I was not scared. I was not scared to make something big. I managed the depression to know that all my country was watching, all the people were following. But I believe what I did all my life, I believe all what I work in my life, to put everything that I have, and maybe I can win, maybe I can lose, but for sure I will give everything. And if I will give everything, I will have a chance. So I was really, really happy that I was not scared to make something big, because I prepared all my life for that.
How aware were you at the time of how big a deal it was in Chile, in at home for you? Were you conscious of that at the time, or did it take some time afterwards to really realize the significance of what you did?
Yes, of course, it's huge. But when you are young, 23, 24 years old, normally, because now I'm 40 and I look back, is when you are at that age, you are not that scared to experiment new things, or you are like more. You have a lot of, depends on the personality, but at that time you are not that afraid, or you are not thinking so much about the situation because everything is new. Maybe at the end of your career, or maybe when you are 30, you look back and you start to think more of the things. So I think that I was completely focused on tennis, completely focused on my career. And we arrived to Chile after 2 weeks because we took the flight from Athens to New York directly. So after US Open, we arrived to Chile, and all the people receiving us in the street saying thanks for the effort, really happy the people to have two Chilean guys, young guys fighting for our country. And I had the best memories, because until today the people support me a lot because of this. They know that every time that I represent my country, I give my best in the good moments and the bad moments, but I feel it a lot. So since I was young, for me it was really important to represent my country. Until today, I'm the Davis Cup captain. It doesn't matter in if I am in my best moment or not, but to represent my country is going to be always one of the most important things that I can make in my life.
It was such a late finish after the doubles final on the Saturday. What time did you get to bed? What was it like after winning that first gold medal? The joy, but also knowing you had the biggest match of your life next day.
Yeah, I had a lot of troubles because so late we finished around. I don't remember the time, but after the final in doubles, my week was not finished. Was not the end. I won my first. We won the first gold medal of the history of Chile. We one of my best friends. We born in tennis almost together, and it was really amazing. But the next day, I play again for another opportunity. Need to get another gold medal, so it's. I was really focused that I make everything the press. I was like going to make the doping, the anti-doping. So I arrived so late to the villa after to make the treatment, the massage, with the doctors, with the physios, to eat something, and then the next day prepare to play against another battle of five sets. So. Then the next day also I made the anti-doping. In the morning, because some rules, I think at noon, and I went to bed at 5 or 6 in the morning. So I slept before the final of singles, like all, I think 5 hours or 6 hours maximum, plus all the motion, plus all the things. So before the final in the singles, I was really, really tired. You have to think that I play all the week singles, doubles. So I woke up and my energy was not the best. I went for the warm up and I didn't feel like normal. I had pain in my feet, in my legs, and it was really tough. And in the final also, I start so pumped until 5-0, because I start 5-0 the first set. Then I won 6-3, but then I start to lose my energy. My game was not with the power like normally, and I start to fight with that. In some moments better, some moments not, and also I had a great player in front like Marty Fish that was playing so good. But I also, what I told you before, I was fighting against this situation. I was fighting, but I had a lot of confidence because of the winning of the week, and also in my mind. I have like the feeling that in one moment I will feel better, or I have a second air, and then I have to take the chance. And it happens. And for sure, to win 2 gold medals and to be the only tennis player in the history to make 2 gold medals in the same Olympic game is really incredible feeling, because when you start in this sport, or you try to be someone in any work, you always want to have something big. So today I look back And I said, okay, I born in Viña del Mar, a small city. I come from Chile. For us, is that everything is so difficult. We live far. And okay, but I made everything to be possible to make a good career. And today I feel like honored to give like a message to the kids and to the people from my country that when you want something in your life, you have to fight for your dreams. You never know where you can arrive. But the most important thing is to look back and you stay calm. Okay, I give my best and this is what it is.
I don't know if you believe in destiny or anything like that, but did it feel a bit like that at the time, that it was just sort of meant to be in some way?
I think that of course that if you don't believe in something and you play tennis because you need to do something, you need passion, you need to fight for your things, you need to be different, you need to have personality, you need to demonstrate in the court that you want more than nothing to win, more than nothing to fight. And then, of course, I have many, many moments in my life that I didn't play well, that the things go to the other side, that maybe I was complicated, because it's normal. The life is like this. Of course, now we are talking this part of the story that is huge, that is big, that is amazing. But to reach these mental things, to be strong and all these kind of things, before you have many, many, many stories that you were not like that, and or you were having a lot of problems and you need to fight against this. So I think when I arrived there with 24 years, I was in the certain age because I was young with more experience and I could manage better the situations.
What were the celebrations like after you won the second gold? Did Fernando wait for you to celebrate the doubles, or did he go out on the Saturday?
No. I arrived like at that moment. I remember that I arrived to the Olympic Villa after the final because I made a lot of press. Then I went to different places, the mandatory things that you need to do after the tournament. So I arrived at, I finished very late the match. So I think around 4 or 5 in the morning. And then my tennis coach, Patricio Rodriguez, that he was there with me, he passed away like 2-3 weeks ago. So he was a really experienced coach. He helped me a lot. And he said to me, okay, now this is finished, but we need to go tomorrow in the first flight, because now the next week, the next Monday, in 7 days, I start the US Open and you're going to have chances to do something big there. So as soon we left the place and you all start to think the next one. So I think that I arrived at 5 and at 6:30, I left to the hotel. So no celebration. I think only 45 minutes, 1 hour, I spent time with all the Chileans that they stay there in Greece, in Athens. And then I left to the hotel because I went to Long Island. I signed in that tournament. Normally, before we have a tournament in Long Island, before US Open. And I was there, I think, supposed to play. So I went, I traveled from Greece to Long Island to pull out from the tournament because of the rules. Then I came back to Miami for 2-3 days to make some things. And then I go back to New York, arrive on Thursday, and then the tournament starts on Monday. So I think it was the right decision to continue, because, of course, if we don't have, like, after 7 days, the US Open, maybe I had the chance to stay 2-3 more days in Greece and to know the place and to see other sports or to share more time. But sometimes it's difficult when you have like Olympic Games and US Open only 7 days between.
Was that hard in some ways, though, not having that time to reflect on what you had achieved? For all the other athletes in other sports, the Olympics is kind of the end of a 4-year cycle and everything stops for a bit afterwards. They get time, but you had no time.
I think that we are used to be in the tour and playing every week. And for us to play the Olympic Games is something totally different. So we are more used to playing the Tour than the Olympic Games. Of course, that, for example, in my side, I remember that that week that I told you I went to Miami, I went to New York because I made so many things I pulled out from the tournament. Then I make with Fernando, we went to make a live show in Miami. Then we stayed there 2 days practicing. Then we arrived with a lot of attention. And was my first time. Okay, I was close to be top 10 at that time. But when I arrived to New York after the Olympics, of course, was the first time that I feel so many journalists and people around me and a lot of expectation. And of course, that tournament, maybe I was a little bit more stressed than normally. And also inside the court, I was expecting to play normally maybe the same level that I played the 7 days before, but it's a different tournament and different conditions, maybe a little bit more pressure because it's the first time that they're looking at you more. And yeah, I didn't play in the US Open the way that I play in Athens. I fight a lot, but I was a little bit stressed. I think because of that is normal. It's normal. You need to manage all this kind of situation. And maybe it was the first time in a Grand Slam, but I say, okay, I won the Olympic Games. Maybe I have the chance to do something big now. So I was expecting a lot of me, but it's difficult to recover in 7 days from all this situation for a young guy of 24 years old. Of course, I try a lot. I remember I lost in the second round in the US Open with match points in favor. So I lost many, many situations, and but this is something that is normal in our career.
Has any feeling in your career ever compared, been able to compare to that week in Athens?
No, because Olympic Games, like I told you at the beginning, is only 3-4 times, 5 maximum, few athletes that can play or can be in. So if you make a mistake or you lose chances or something go wrong, you need to wait 4 more years. So the pressure is big. And I tell you, like in our country, when we play like Olympic Games or World Team Cups or Davis Cups or ATP Cups or whatever, the people in Chile is very patriot. And since I was really, really young, my parents and my grandparents, they always put in my mind that you need to be proud of your country. So I think that the feeling, of course, to win important matches, is you're going to be always happy. But the feeling that to win 2 gold medals in Olympic Games, for me, was the best and the biggest 2 weeks of my life.
And it was Chile's first 2 gold medals. You won their first ever Olympic gold medal.
Yeah.
What did that mean to the country?
A lot, because I think that 15 years ago, with all these situations on Athens, I think we sent a message, in my case also, with Fernando and me. We sent a message to the people and to the kids that when you dream and you want to be something, there is a chance. Always there's a chance. Of course, you need talent, you need passion, you need to work hard and everything. But when you are young, nobody can quit your dreams. Nobody can say no to you if you want to arrive. If I start to look back when I was 5 years old and start to see the tournaments on the TV, or when I saw at 5 years old the first Olympic Games in Los Angeles in the United States, to imagine to be there is a honor. Just to arrive to our Olympic Games is a honor. Then to think to win a medal is crazy. And then to win 2 gold medals and the first ones in the history of your country is really amazing, because this demonstrates that we always can make bigger things. Depends on how you manage many, many things and how you want. So today, still, they always said, this guy won 2 Olympic Games, this, and all the story. And everywhere, I think that after Olympic Games, before the Olympic Games, all the people from tennis, maybe they know me, the people around tennis. But then, when I won the Olympic Games, I passed to the other stage, that is, I was recognized in the world of sports. Before tennis and then sports, because to where you go to be Olympian champion is something that all the people respect. Of course, they respect your career, your tennis career. But for example, today, everywhere that I go, the first thing that people remember is the Olympic champion. Then my career, my tennis career. Then that I won 6 tournaments. Then that I played good in Madrid. Then that I won 1 tournament in Europe and or whatever. But first is that, and it's normal. It's normal because it was the biggest thing that I made in my life. And more in Chile, that they follow a lot when we always play for our country. Nicolas Massú or Fernando González, we always represent Chile. But it's different when you play in this kind of tournament, because it's just few.
Just finally, where do you keep your medals?
My medals are in Viña del Mar, where I born, in the house of my mother. I put it there for the first time, and then only I took it out when I say bye to tennis in 2013, when I make a press conference to say bye for tennis, and I put it in my neck to show to all the people, and then always keep it in the apartment, because I prefer to have it with her, because I'm traveling all the year, and I feel more sure that if the medals are with her.
So you never wear them?
Only one time. In that day, in August of 2013, to show to the people.
Maybe one day again.
Yeah, of course, in a special occasion, I will make it again. For me, it's really important that the people, the young people, be proud that one Chilean guy wins the two gold medals in the history, and the. It's an example for the what you love, I think.
Yeah, slight confusion in his voice when I ask. You don't ever wear them. You don't ever just get them out and parade around the house in them. He's like, what are you on about? Why would I do that?
Normal people don't do that.
Clearly, subtext, that's what I'd be doing. Yeah, it's the second best answer to where do you keep your medals, other than, you know, about my person at all times, is at my mum's house.
Yeah.
Or at my parents' house. I do like that. That's very sweet, isn't it? And you can just, I loved that you could just, he was reeking of joy. He was like Matt today. He was just, you know, it was pouring out of him. The joy at reliving that magical week in Athens in 2004. And I loved that he went back 10 years later and decided to get to know the city a bit better and properly acquaint himself with it. And, you know, he obviously feels this incredible connection with that place now. It's all very romantic and magical.
We went a pretty roundabout route in order to get that interview through a number of different parties. And the moment we got his number, I mean, there was no issue from him. He'd never heard of us from Adam, I don't think. But he was quite happy to do the interview and as you hear, just talk so with such warmth and passion and affection for that period in his life. And it'll be with him forever, which is quite heartwarming.
I should just say, I did also ask him about the fact that he coaches somebody now that has publicly signalled their intention not to play the Olympics and has previously shown very little interest in the Olympics. And he said, look, Dominic had made and announced that decision before I came on board and started working with him. He was extremely respectful of that decision. He said, look, Dominic loves playing for his country. He said, Dominic feels a big attachment to the Kitchbühel event and I respect that. But he also he did imply that it would be something they would be discussing. I wanted him to say, yeah, he's an idiot. I will make him realize what he's missing out on. But he was far too nice and respectful for for that. But I do just wonder when they do have that conversation whether Dominic's mind will be changed at all. Possibly not.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Should we hear from the man that he beat in that gold medal match? And I say this with slight trepidation because I really enjoyed my 45 minutes chatting to Marty Fish. He's another very interesting, thoughtful, articulate bloke. But the 10 or so minutes we spent talking about that match and about winning a medal for his country, an unexpected medal, were quite painful and quite tough, actually. It was clearly something that still hurts for Marty Fish. And you might think, why? He won a medal. Well, he'll explain why. Because, yeah, for him, it feels like one that got away rather than one something that he won. I asked him where that balance is between the joy of winning a medal and the despair and disappointment at it not being the gold.
It's tough to find, to be honest. In the moment, I sort of felt like, okay, you know, I'm really bummed right now, but in time, it'll be really amazing to bring this medal back and sort of share it with my family and friends. And that never really happened. I never really felt like, okay, let me show this thing off. Let me show my second place off. And it just didn't feel right. I sort of even felt like third, you know, like bronze medal. At least you win that match. Fernando Gonzalez beat Taylor Dent in that third and fourth playoff. And Fernando won his match to win his medal. I lost my match to get my medal. So it felt odd. The other thing, too, is that people maybe not understand is that they give you an Olympic ring, regardless of if you're an Olympic athlete. And you can, you know, you can put a one diamond in there for an extra $200 or whatever. But they put your sport and they put your name on it. And if you're lucky enough to win a medal, they'll put what you won on there. And they send it to you after the fact, obviously. And so I got my ring in the mail, and it said gold medalist on it. And I initially was like, oh, wow, this is pretty cool. I got a gold medal ring, you know, and I put it on. I'll never forget this. I put it on one time. I went to the supermarket just to get, you know, something and some groceries for the house and had it on. And I remember checking out and I looked down at it and I'm like, what are you doing wearing this thing? Like, you are not a gold medalist. Why are you wearing this? And I never put it on again. I actually don't know where it is anymore. So it was kind of a bummer to not get to not win the gold medal. Then I got my ring that said gold medalist.
You should have asked for an exchange. So you got the right one.
Yeah, maybe Nick got the Nico got the silver medal.
I spoke to him this morning and he didn't mention it.
Okay. well, I should send it to him.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you remember how you felt on the podium?
I do. Yeah, I do. I was the pictures say it all, because I've seen the pictures before a few times. Sort of devastated is an understatement. They threw up the song right after "We Are the Champions," the Queen, you know, for Nicholas, and I'll never forget that. It's one of my least favorite songs now, and I used to like the song. So there's and there's a lot of. Look, it was some of my greatest memories of my life on the tennis court, and in turn, some of my worst memories on the tennis court, all in one event. I never went back to an Olympics. I could have gone in 2008. I could have gone in 2012 in London, and I never went back. Mostly because I thought that I probably wouldn't be winning a gold medal again, or having the chance of putting myself in that position again. Partly because, you know, just saying, look, I've been there, I've done that. It was an amazing experience, one that I'll never forget, obviously. And I'll just take that with me. And mostly because of the scar tissue from, you know, from sort of having it in my hands and then sort of letting it slip away. And, I just felt like I didn't want to rehash those feelings, and so I never went back.
Was that, particularly in 2008, I suppose, was that a tough decision not to go back?
Not
or was it pretty?
Not really.
Clear?
Not really. I mean, if the look, I love going to London, and so if that one was, if 08, if they were in 08 instead of 2012, I may have had, you know, Beijing is a fairly, is very different from, you know, what obviously we are used to, even you in London, or I'm assuming you're in London over there, or the UK, and it's just very different, and, not one of my favorite places to go and to play. So that was a fairly easy decision. The 2012 was also fairly easy in a sense that I was in a different place in my career. I was in the top 10 in the world, and I was in a position at that point to, I'd worked so hard to get into the top 10 in the world and changed my lifestyle around, really. That was my opportunity to sort of collect, and make a bunch of money in, appearance fees. And so I chose that, honestly, over the Olympics. I chose playing in a few events that would pay me a bunch of money to play in. And I felt like that was my opportunity to really, think about my future a little bit and think about, I was married at the time, you know, by then. And so I had a family on the way that I wanted to be able to take care of, and being able to set aside a bunch of money from a few events and not go back to the Olympics again was a fairly easy choice for me at the time.
And no regrets?
No. Would the Olympics at Wimbledon have been amazing? Of course. And grass courts for me were would have been a nice opportunity. I would have loved to have played some doubles as well. Doubles is always a fun for me, and I've always played well or done well in doubles. So that would have been maybe my, my biggest opportunity to win a gold medal. But again, I have a medal, and if I didn't have a medal, maybe that would have been different. If I would have lost in the first round against Jonas Bjorkman, I probably would have played in three or four Olympics, but I didn't. And I have a medal, and no one can take it away from me, but I don't have that coveted gold that I really wanted.
Where do you keep the medal?
It's in my safe here at the house, and it doesn't come out very often. I think as a joke, I've got one of those Peloton treadmills, and my buddy, one of my best friends from home, has one as well. And they have this new thing called the video chat, where you can chat or you can video and work out in the same workout mm-hmm. together. And we had planned this workout, and I jumped on there without a shirt on, and I put my medal. I had my medal around my neck as a joke. You know, to sort of start running with them, because we were going to race, you know, we were like in a competition. So I figured that would have been kind of funny. So I did that to him. So that's the last time I've done that. That was, I don't know, 8 months ago or so, 6 months ago. So
that's a great prop.
It doesn't come off. Yeah. It doesn't come out too often, unfortunately. And I haven't, you know, it's not one of those things you can sort of lose and then replace, like a watch or something. You don't get another one if you lose it. So, I don't have it, you know, out to show or anything in my house. So I don't know, just kind of sits in my safe.
Use of medals as props in practical jokes is also something that I will accept. But yeah, I'm not sure about the safe. I mean, it's
fitting with his experience though, isn't it? Yeah. Just sits in my safe. And what more is there to say? That's where it stands in his life. It's hard for him to look at it, I think.
Yeah, and I should say those photos that he referenced when I asked him whether he remembered being on the podium, and he said, yeah, well, I've looked at the photos since then and they sum it up. So he'd kind of prepared me for how gut-wrenching those photos were going to be. And nonetheless, when Matt dug them out yesterday, they still punched me in the gut. They are harrowing to look at. I love it. I love it when it's like in the Oscars when a loser doesn't bother with their magnanimous, I'm so pleased for my rival nominee face. It's just the best thing. And he is not bothering to disguise how disgusted he is with that moment. And the colour of the medal around his neck in that moment, because he thinks it was his to lose. And he feels he lost the gold rather than winning the silver.
And as you pointed out, made all the worse by the fact that he's got to wear that wreath on his head, which really kind of should be reserved for the winners, I think. And I think if you wear that having in a moment of disappointment, it just sort of adds to the slight humiliation, even though it isn't a humiliation. He's won a silver medal at the Olympics, but
yeah, you've lost a tennis match. You have to stick around and receive recognition of that whilst wearing fancy dress. It's not necessarily the situation you want. And we'll be posting those photos on our social media channels if you want to see them, because they do, as Marty said, that they tell the whole story, especially as, and we'll be hearing from Fernando Gonzalez shortly, especially as it was Massu and Gonzalez who had won the doubles gold together the day before that were first and third, so next to one another on the podium, and they're sharing this moment. They're sharing this joy, and Gonzalez is delighted with his bronze and delighted with that moment on the podium with his doubles partner and all of that. And he just cuts such a lonely, out of place figure, does Marty Fish.
It looks a bit like
really
when you and Matt went to a Fulham Reading match last year together and Fulham won and Catherine didn't look happy.
Although on that day, I was actually the lonely figure because I was, I was a Fulham fan among Reading fans, having to suppress my joy.
That was only the case until half time, and all of the Reading fans exited and not to return.
It's really fascinating to hear those two interviews back to back. Obviously, most obviously for the difference in their voice and their experience at those Olympics. But I thought there was also something really interesting about how they're quite similar ages, Massu and Fish. I think it's only a couple of years between them. And you asked Fish in another portion of that interview whether, as you said, it was the one that got away, whether he had any regrets about the actual match he played in the final, because he lost it from a 2-1 up and a breakup. And he said he didn't actually have any regrets about the tennis he played, but what he regretted was not having the maturity to recognize the moment and recognizing that it might not come again. Whereas Massu, talking in that interview there, was so appreciative of the moment and knew that he'd been kind of dreaming of this moment and didn't let the magnitude of it get to him, but actually embraced it and managed to find something within himself that was extra because it was the Olympics and because he'd built it up in his mind. And I just thought it was an interesting contrast in those two very different approaches to the same match, and just the part and the role that the Olympics played in their respective careers, I thought was neatly summarized in their reactions to it.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact that Marty Fish never played another Olympics, I find extraordinary. And although it was sort of different reasoning for 08 and 2012, he does reference the scar tissue from Athens being kind of the primary reason why he didn't feel compelled to return. So, yeah, just as a measure of how tough that loss was for him. Let's hear from Fernando González now, talking about his experience of that Athens Olympics. He left with a gold from the doubles and a bronze from the singles. He lost out to Marty Fish in the semi-finals. And David asked him about that loss.
It was one of the worst days of my career life, you know, and I was really sad. And the next day I have to came over to play for the bronze medal in singles and the gold medal in doubles. So in 24 hours, I have a lot of different feelings, you know. I was really disappointed, sad one day, and the next day I get the bronze medal. I beat Taylor Dent 16-14 in the third set, saving a couple of match points. And then I almost didn't have rest because it was the ladies' final and it was really quick. We have to play best of five sets in the final. Doubles final. So I was really tired, and Nicolas was really important that because he had a lot of energy. And again, we saved four match points. We was 6-2 down in the tiebreak in the fourth set. So it was, I mean, it was incredible because every time I won a medal, I saved a couple of match points.
It is incredible, isn't it? I was watching those scenes. I just wonder, have you ever felt like that on a tennis court anywhere else?
This was completely different because it was, for my country, it was really, really huge. It's one of the best moments of the history of my country. I don't want to say this is the most important one, but it's one of the most. And after, when we came back to Chile, I never dreamed with this. You know, we was in a cabriolet bus, and the people was on the city, on the street, say hi to us. I mean, thousands of people. And it was really, everything was so quick because we played that in 1 week, playing singles and doubles. And the people start to get really excited during that week in our country. So, of course, the Grand Slams for me are the best. But the Olympic Games, I did better, maybe. And the people in Chile, I mean, they always remember about this.
And what Nicolas went on to do and winning the singles gold as well. I mean, what do you think about what he achieved?
Wow, it was unbelievable. It was a really, really great effort. To be honest, I wish I can be there. I wish I can play that final, but of course, I mean, by far that was the best time of his career, winning singles and doubles. in the same Olympics. Nobody else did it. I mean, maybe Rafa, he won in singles, he won in doubles, but in a different games. In the same games, it's not easy. It's not easy. I mean, he did a really, really good job, Nicolas.
How do you think he did it?
Nicolas has a lot of he's a great fighter, first of all. I mean, maybe he don't have the best serve, he don't have the best backhand, he don't have the best forehand. He has really good shots, but the way that he compete, I mean, it's really incredible because that's why he did it, I think, because after playing singles and doubles with a lot of pressure, I say a lot of pressure because we are from the small country, talking about sport, you know. But I mean, the way that he fights, the way that he thinks that he can do it, I think that's why he did it, you know. And of course, he had a really tough draw in the beginning of the tournament. And then he started to play better and better.
Mm. It shows the magic of the Olympics, but it also shows the highs and lows, doesn't it? Because there were you feeling really sad that you lost to Marty Fish, and then you win the bronze, and then you win the doubles gold, and Marty plays against Nicolas, and he just misses out on the gold medal in the singles. It's so many highs and lows, isn't it?
Yeah, because normally in the regular tournament, I mean, you don't play for the third place. You know, it was really strange for me to play for the bronze because I don't play anymore normally in the tournament, but you still have the chance to win a medal. And that's why I went to the Olympics, to get the medal. I don't care anyone. Of course, if you get a gold, it's way better, but that's the magic from the Olympics because, I mean, on the tour, normally I stay by my own in the room. In the Olympics, I have to share the room with Nicolas, and he was so happy because he had to play the final the next day, and I was really sad because I have the chance to do it also, but I have to play for the bronze. And, of course, the Olympic Village, the atmosphere is incredible. It's incredible that you can spend time with other disciplines, other country, other cultures, other realities, even if you're same country, other realities of the sports, you know. And it's I think the Olympic Village and the Olympic Games are the soul of the sport.
The soul of the sport. That's something I can get on board with. It's so nice to hear from him. Such a nice-seeming bloke. I just want to correct a point of fact from that. Nicolas Massou is the only man to have won singles and doubles gold at the same Olympics. But, of course, both the Williams sisters have done that. Venus did it in 2000 and Serena did it in London in 2012. But, yeah, Massou is the only man to have achieved that. And imagine if it had been an all-Chilean final. I mean, not for Gonzalez, but maybe it's better that it wasn't. And actually, I don't know. I really, the more I hear these interviews, the more I really think there's something in this losing a silver, winning a bronze thing. I think I'd rather have the bronze.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. The bronze medal winners do seem happier than the silver medal defeated players. And actually, Massou and Gonzalez were sharing a room. I mean, imagine what that would have been like if they'd have gone back to the room the night before the Olympic final that they're playing against each other. And what if they fell out? And then they've got to play the doubles. Mind you, they played the doubles before. But anyway, didn't happen like that. It is, I think, because I didn't get a chance to follow that particular Olympics in great detail at the time, I saw these results coming through, but I worked in tennis. The idea that Nicolas Massou was doing this just seemed absurd. It was unthinkable before the event that he would win gold medal in either event to me. And so it was magical.
A man with the least glamorous and impressive nickname of all sports people, I think, to have achieved great success.
What is it?
What is his nickname?
Well, it was the squirrel.
I like it.
because of his long, bushy brown ponytail, like a squirrel's tail. Well, I assume that's why it was. I can't identify. I don't know Nicholas Massieu well enough to know if he has other character traits that are akin to a squirrel.
So he's ahead of the time for UTS.
Yeah. Yeah. Even Nicholas Massieu, Grigor, has a nickname. Yeah. There was a mosquito, wasn't there? But that
Ferrero.
Yeah. Mosquitoes are killers, though. I still think that's more, you know, squirrels just eat nuts.
Maybe
anyway,
more.
There we go. There we go.
There can be a few mean ones out there, you know. Squirrels can turn nasty. I've heard the grey ones. The grey ones can be nasty.
Can they?
That's what I've heard. The red ones are nice.
From who? I think the grey ones are just more common, aren't they?
It's just what I'm getting from squirrel circles.
Well, you and Rosie are on the same page then, because Rosie is on a one-dog mission to hunt down the country's squirrel population. Her success rate is currently 0%, but she's very committed to the cause. So that is the Olympics 2004. I hope you've enjoyed it. The good news is we're approaching now sort of Matt's memory vault. 2008, Matt, have you got much for that?
Yes, Beijing is my time.
Matt's alive. He's got memories. It's going to be great. Join us tomorrow. Are these coming out daily? I think they are, aren't they? Join us tomorrow for Beijing 2008 Relived. Another one that got away for Roger Federer. We'll see you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.